Just as they did with the rise of work from home during the pandemic, tech giants are jumping now to serve the rise of remote students as we enter this unique back-to-school season. And that's where we're going to start our conversation in this Friday's Tech Radio. Our guest joining us today, Amos Asip, Chief Information Security Officer at Exigent Solutions here in Sioux Falls. Amos, welcome back to Tech Radio. How's it going?
Hey, good morning. Good. Glad to be back. It feels like it's been forever.
It sure does. And also joining us today, SDPB's own Kent Osborne. Hi, Kent.
Hello.
Hello, hello. So we're going to try to connect also with Jeff Litterick coming up later in this segment. But to start off with an article I saw recently, Zoom, the free Zoom for Education plan is rolling out some updates coming up soon, customizing the gallery view, spotlighting students presenting, a lot of different updates and things like this. What are we hearing about updates to some of these services that we, many of us, have only recently become familiar with and applying it to this back-to-school season?
Yeah, the things that, you know, the big focus right now is obviously on security. We've heard lots of the stories about things, the Zoom bombing, you know, actual terms being coined because of a lack of security in some of the products. And it's not just Zoom. Zoom is one that that gets a lot of press, but there certainly are a lot of others out there. In fact, I was reading some articles yesterday about how there are so many technology options that are available to teachers and administration that sometimes it's difficult to weed through all of them. And honestly, how do you determine which one has the appropriate security built in? How do you do your due diligence on those in order to make sure you're not utilizing a technology that's going to cause problems, that's going to cause disruptions in the classroom? And so, you know, the kind of rule of thumb is to stick with the big names, stick with the ones that you've heard of, maybe ones that other educators have utilized before and had good luck with. But even then, you're at the at the will of those folks who are making those products to put that security in and make sure that kids can't get around things, to make sure that people can't join when they're not supposed to, et cetera. So it's a tough ocean to wade through and figure out what it is that you're supposed to be doing and which products you're supposed to be using.
Right. Kent, are you hearing fairly similar things, or are there any particular resources that really raise your eyebrows or you think are kind of the go-to?
Well, Amos is the security guy, so that's what he focuses on. I'm kind of the experience guy as far as how's this going to work. I mean, the video can't be horrible, you know. you got to be able to have just a click for sharing and whiteboarding, and you know, you got to have the things that you need for education. And they're starting to layer those their classroom product. They're starting to layer those services on that really fine-tune their platform that, you know, it was for board meetings and getting together, and all of a sudden it had to do this other thing. And so accessibility for, you know, really all the learners, you know, being able to record sessions and transcriptions and, you know, you think of all the things you need or all the tools you need in your tool bag, those are the things that are starting to be brought online. As well as the security, obviously they needed to do that because that was a terrible situation. But now that they've got that, they're working on that and getting that tamped down. They're starting to get, they're turning this into a really powerful tool for the classroom.
And I want to welcome our third guest today. Jeff Litterick is joining us now. He's a network engineer with the Bureau of Information and Technology in Pierre, South Dakota. Jeff, welcome back to Tech Radio. It's been a minute.
Yes, it has been.
Well, we're talking back to school in this first segment. So, Jeff, I'm wondering if you've heard anything about particular back to school resources or even those security methods that people can take to avoid things like Zoom bombing and things like this. What are you hearing?
Well, a lot of it, especially in the security side, because there's actually been Combine in Colorado got Zoom bombed with threats to perform another mass shooting here just recently on one of their first days or sometime this week. Is the you need to be aware of basic security stuff. And Zoom now has, unlike last spring, has all the pieces in place, and so do the other ones, to be able to limit who can join a video call, who can, when people can talk, you can mute, you can create rooms where before the teacher comes in, that the students can join the meeting, but they don't become part of the meeting until the teacher allows that to happen, and they have full control. And you really need to use those. If you just default to a Zoom meeting or another conference, anyone can join those. Anyone can get in, anyone can talk, anyone can, in many cases, anyone can mute anybody else, including the teacher. So you do need to set up your meetings correctly. And you have to follow the guidelines that Zoom and the other people put out to set those meetings up. And one of the more important parts we're seeing now, that I've been seeing, is a lot more phishing-type attacks on students in order to gain access to Zoom meetings and stuff. You need to be aware that you don't click on links, especially since you're home and stuff, through the student email systems and stuff. Don't click on links you don't know about and stuff. Hackers are actually trying to take over the students' computers to leverage themselves into the meetings. Because Zoom has put these controls on. So that's the next kind of – security is always an arms race. You fix one hole, and they try to find new ones, and it's a never-ending battle. But right now they're trying to actually hack student machines. So students need to be aware. Don't click on links. All the basic security stuff we go through as state employees, as normal business employees and stuff, you need to be aware that that needs to now take place at the school level, because the students are directly being targeted in the same ways that employees of any company are nowadays from hackers trying to get in. So it's kind of a step up, especially for the younger. If you're doing video conferencing and stuff, you need to have some kind of parental supervision of that, so that bad things don't happen.
Right. And I have not been involved personally in a Zoom bombing, but I know a church group I'm connected with had a Bible study Zoom bombed not too long ago, and it's nasty stuff. Jeff, as you mentioned, you know, threats of violence, you can have pornographic images popping up, I believe ethnic and other slurs were being screamed into the microphone in the one that I heard about. This is not something you want your second grader dealing with when they're supposed to be, you know, in a safe, like, school environment. So we've talked a lot about Zoom, for instance. I'm also hearing about things like Google Classroom and other resources like this. Amos, you mentioned, like, one of the better steps is sticking with that name recognition. Are we hearing much about security breaches with other things like Google and other things that people are using for work from home, or is it just Zoom because they ended up being almost the default solution to this new problem that we have? Amos, maybe I'll start with you.
Yeah, you know, we haven't heard of. I mean, there are minor ones that happen, and if you are in the industry or are looking for that sort of stuff, we see kind of some minor stuff happening almost every day. There's a small security breach here and there, and some of the security breaches are where somebody is actively trying to go after a platform. They are actively trying to find a bug or a vulnerability within the system in order to exploit it. And in other cases, the breaches are stumbled upon. Maybe there's some data that has been exposed that neither the platform knew about, but somebody accidentally found and then reported it. And we don't really know if that data has ever been accessed or if it's been used for nefarious purposes, et cetera. So there's various levels of security breaches, and the ones that we tend to think of are the ones where people are actively trying to exploit them. But certainly there are ones where, it's quite frequent. Somebody leaves some data in a folder that's shared on the internet, and they don't intend for that data to get out, but it's not secured well, it doesn't have a password on it, etc. So there are smaller ones that do happen. It's the ones that make the news are the ones that A, somebody's actively exploiting, or B, has the user base like Zoom, because if it's a piece of software you've never heard of or you don't have any intention of using, it certainly doesn't create the interest that something like Zoom does now that their user base has shot up into the millions.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the next logical thing when we hear about more working from home, more school from home, is whatever bandwidth you have, the network capabilities you have, people freezing in the middle of a class on their video chat and things like this. We were hearing kind of in the early days about different internet providers providing some of those resources for free or really reduced for schools. Not sure if that's still the case. Amos, Jeff, Kent, not sure which one of you wants to lead off with that, but what's our pulse on how network capabilities are looking in South Dakota and whether that's still also an issue for folks?
It's absolutely still an issue for folks. I hear stories almost every day from parents that live in rural areas around, I shouldn't even call Vermilion's a city, mm-hmm. the city of Vermilion. You know, there are some point to point, resources available and it seems like some of the cellular capabilities are getting better. And those people that can consume those do, but the last mile is still an issue, at least in my little neck of the woods. Getting adequate, reliable service, to people that didn't really have to worry about that in the past. I mean, you know, they could use their phone for email and even for some light, hotspots for some Netflix or some entertainment at night, but really weren't worried about that, you know, always on, always available, always fast kind of connection, for the whole house. Mm-hmm. It's a big thing is devices. All of a sudden you've got mom or dad or mom and dad working home at home. And then you've got, times the number of kids that you've got that need access to hardware. And that's been an issue as well.
Yeah. Jeff, did you have something you were going to add there?
Yeah, it really kind of depends on where you live and, areas and stuff. I know around Pure, for example, Pure was always okay, but just like Kent was saying, the surrounding areas around Pierre were really bad. DSL was very limited and only very close to Pierre, and there was nothing except wireless and really bad wireless for anybody else. Mm. But with some grants and stuff now, that's been pretty much taken care of around Pierre, where we're getting gig or 500 meg speeds to even rural places. I know back in my family farm around Howard has 250, 500 also. Because back then, many years ago, they did a fiber to all the farmhouses. So it is very hit and miss in the state, even in the rural areas. Some rural areas are really connected now. Some have almost nothing. And it seems to be very spotty. So it is more a matter of exactly where you decide to live at this point. On average, from all the speed tests and all the stuff we did, on average, South Dakota is actually one of the better states. If you live in a good area for internet connectivity and speeds and stuff, then many other surrounding states and other states in the United States, our average speeds are much greater and better through our carriers. But it is a very hit and miss kind of thing. Your neighbor could have fiber and you could not. And it's going to still take more time to do that, though. There's programs that keep popping up through the FCC and the state and stuff, trying to expand that out in the very rural areas. So the FCC just is trying to get another one going out here soon. We'll see how 5G goes through. Not really kind of much hope outside the major urban centers for that right now, but there are promises there. It's very hit and miss.
Yeah. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back with Tech Radio afterwards. You're listening to In the Moment on listener-supported SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment Tech Radio. I'm Jackie Hendry, filling in today for Lori Walsh. I'm joined today by Amos Asip, Chief Information Security Officer at Exigent Solutions in Sioux Falls. Jeff Litterick is a network engineer with the Bureau of Information and Technology in Pierre, and SDPB's own Kent Osborne is here with us as well. And I want to turn our attention, Jeff, as we were just jumping into the last break, you bringing up the FCC, 5G, how these can help us deal with some of the solutions as far as the bandwidth problems as people are continuing to work from home and go to school from home. Fairly recently announced that Sioux Falls Mayor Paul Tenhaken was appointed to the FCC's Intergovernmental Advisory Committee. He is, in fact, chairing that Intergovernmental Advisory Committee. And we know Mayor Tenhaken in the past has been a champion for bringing 5G to Sioux Falls. Jeff, since you brought it up, I'll start with you on this line of conversation. What could it mean for South Dakota to have that kind of representation on this sort of committee?
It means a lot. Most people don't realize, but Senator John Thune has been on the Telecommunications Senate Committee for very many years, and has actually brought in the FCC into the state for meetings and stuff before, and has been a very big advocate for South Dakota, and it has helped us out a lot. I kind of mentioned that we're better off than many other states, and a large part of that has to do with the political appointees and getting the visibility here to get the money and to help out build out these networks, because they're not cheap to build in rural areas. And John Thune's been pushing for that. Hopefully with the Sioux Falls mayor become part of the FCC commission, we can continue that. It's been a big help, and I've been watching this now for 20 years since I've been in the state telecommunication stuff, and it's grown leaps and bounds, and it's been a humongous kind of help and something we've always prioritized. The governors, I know, all the way back to Jane Clough, have always been a big proponent of increasing telecommunications and the connections whenever possible and the bandwidth and stuff, and it's been a good deal, and hopefully this only promises more and better things going forward too. So,
Amos, when we think about cybersecurity and things like this too, what would you like to see come out of this advisory committee, especially with that kind of Sioux Falls and South Dakota representation?
Well, you know, it's a huge win for us. Just having Tenhaken's previous experience with technology, having built a successful technology company, having an understanding on how that stuff works, and then at the same time having an understanding on how rural areas are affected by that. How we layer in the security on that, I hope that they get some folks involved who have that experience, who are understanding how that technology works, and that it needs to be baked into the original solution as opposed to an afterthought. I fully expect that, based on Tenhaken being the chair and the other individuals that I've read through, it sounds like there's probably a good understanding that can't be an afterthought. That security needs to be part of it. That infrastructure security is just as important as application security and, people using good passwords, et cetera. So I don't have any concerns that they will forget that or forego it. It's probably going to be well represented with the group they have on this advisory committee.
Mm-hmm. And Kent, bringing you into the conversation, one of the first things I noticed when Mayor Tenhaken tweeted this was the first few comments were related to net neutrality and that kind of ongoing conversation. Is that something you see continuing to be a conversation for this committee, or is that kind of outside the scope there?
Well, Paul's the chair, and if he wants to make that a part of this Intergovernmental Advisory Committee plan, I mean, that's going to be up to him. He's certainly, I think, raised my eyebrows a few times, and I would consider him a forward-thinking telecom person. And now he's got a 2-year term to work in. Not in just, deployment of broadband, which is what we've been talking about, but the public safety communications infrastructure and emergency response and some of the things that starts to make people's eyeballs roll into the back of their heads when they think about them. But they're really vital areas of tech in every single community, and especially in Sioux Falls. It's the largest in the state, but even in little burgs like Vermilion, we still have, you know, emergency response policies and capabilities, and certainly an infrastructure set up, 911, and when things start to flood or things start to fall down or shut off around here, there's people that kick into gear, and this is a part of what he's going to be working on. So it's local, it's state, it's tribal, he's going to be trying to get the commission to set into place rules and policies that he thinks is going to be beneficial to folks around here. And if net neutrality is one of those things, I see him picking up the flag.
In our remaining few minutes left together, I really want to talk about TikTok. So come with me along this journey. And Kent, you mentioned we'll get to the data and the security piece, because of course that's a big piece of this whole conversation. But Kent, you said you're the experienced guy. Are you on TikTok?
No, I'm not. Every now and then my daughter sends me a video off of TikTok to watch because it's something funny. But, and it's not more for security reasons, but it's not my thing. I mean, I barely get Instagram and I use that because I'm a photographer more than anything else. And I like looking at pretty pictures, but, I'm not the demo for, you know, the age group for TikTok. Mm-hmm. Although being a part of this show makes you do things you don't want to do sometimes. So I have installed it and looked and uninstalled it, but no, I'm not a power user of TikTok. I do consume a few videos every now and then because they come across my desk because I get forwarded from other people. But, I'm more of a Reddit person.
Right. well, I did start, I don't make TikToks, but I scroll it pretty frequently, and I'm a millennial, and even I am a bit aged out of the target demo for that app, I think, at least according to a lot of the 12-year-olds making videos about what are millennials doing on this app. Shouldn't you be paying your student loans? And then I keep scrolling and the algorithm corrects, so I never see it again. I enjoy it. It makes me laugh. This is a period of time when I like to laugh. So then when it hits the news cycle that President Trump is considering banning this app in the United States, I got a little irritated about it. But when I expressed that irritation on other social media, people were like, well, TikTok is basically malware. You shouldn't be using it anyway. Amos, you're my security guy. My big question is, how much worse is TikTok than basically any other social media app that I'm already using?
Oh, well, that's kind of the gazillion-dollar question there. The problem is that it's owned by a Chinese company that possibly has the ability to harvest or farm data to take that data off United States shores. And to just do nefarious things. We have actually, have that ability across all of the various social medias. It's just this one is a little more out in the open. It is a great platform. It's a platform that people desire. This need for short form videos has been around for a long time. You know, previously we had the product called Vine, which was a local company as well. It's just a matter of needing somebody. It doesn't need to be TikTok. It has a fun name. It's one of those that's well known. Just we need to get something that is more domestic and people who are more transparent about the security that's in place. There's always a question when you're allowing young users to utilize your software. You know, officially in Facebook and some of those that where there's some age limits about how young you can be. People are getting around that. You mentioned, 12-year-olds using the TikTok platform. What kind of information are they exposing just because they're using it and they may not be cognizant of, what's behind me or what's the information that I'm providing or what's being displayed on the screen that I didn't really realize. So there's lots of technology security issues regardless of the platform. This one just seems to be a little more outstanding because of the Chinese ownership. So
Amos, help me out here. So Microsoft has been talked about being a possible courter or for buying TikTok, and I've also heard, you know, Twitter and a few other U.S.-based technology companies. How does that fix the problem? Immediately does it, or can it, or is there a lot more tentacles out there in the back end of this that just simply an American company? U.S.-based company buying it isn't going to fix?
Well, certainly we don't know all of the ins and outs of the technology behind it, where the data is being shipped to, where it's being stored, whether it's being mined, et cetera. But the perception is certainly there. But all we need to do is look back a few weeks ago when Twitter had their large hack, where people of significance were, you know, requesting Bitcoin be sent to them. And it wasn't really those folks, but it was, you know, somebody who utilized some social engineering and got in and hacked the system. Then that was Twitter. That doesn't necessarily mean a platform is more secure or more safe, but there's the perception there. There's kind of a idea that, you know, keep it in the United States. All of the United States products are going to be more secure. We wouldn't dream of mining your data. We wouldn't dream of, you know, selling it to others who shouldn't have it for nefarious purposes, et cetera. But it's still certainly possible. So I think the biggest benefit of Microsoft or Twitter or whoever happens to take over is just that there's a perception that they're going to fix anything behind the scenes that is obtusely wrong, and that going forward, they're going to do it with the best interests of their users in mind, which that's, you know, we could have a whole nother hour-long conversation right on that one, but it comes down to perception.
Yep.
In that regard, I do want to point out, because TikTok was found guilty of this, but so was Facebook, so was Twitter, so was this. There was a bug, and it's still in Android, but in iOS, where it allowed any app to grab anything that was put on the clipboard. So basically, if you did any copy and pasting on your phone, all these apps would get everything you were copying, including passwords, usernames, whatever you would copy or paste from like your browser or from something else, a URL, they would that app would get a copy of that and be able to ship that off. And both, it's kind of interesting that both Twitter and TikTok were warned of this to stop this, and they said they would, and then they were found 6 months later still doing it and copying all the data off the clipboard and sending it out. So just because it's Chinese U.S., it really depends on who owns them, not maybe so much where they're owned. But we already know both Twitter and TikTok have been found guilty of getting little bits of data they probably should have. And that's been now fixed in the Apple iOS to block that kind of stuff. But it really depends on who buys them.
Well, we'll put a pin in this one. Like you said, we could talk for much longer on this one. The next Tech Radio scheduled for September 4th, I'm being told. So maybe we'll continue this then. But for now, we have to wrap. Amos Aesop, Jeff Litterick, Kent Osborne, thanks all three of you for joining me today. Much appreciated.
Thanks.
Thank you.